process healing traditions, being good to yourself, and it will nourish your body and your taste buds. Call 718-300-4282 for Tunde Lumumba's delicious vegetarian food. And I want to thank you so much for making that donation to WBAI. I think it really enhanced the party to have warm cooked food.
Yeah.
That was delicious and healthy. Can't go wrong. All right, so let me go back to some more to that music so Jim can get in here and get started. Not
wait
too
for
late.
His guests to show up.
So do you want to just keep bitching for a little bit? Or do you want, don't you have stuff? You
I always have stuff. I have a movie review.
Okay, so let's get you in the seat. Let you do your thing.
Yeah, but I got a premium, and the premium is dependent on the guest, and I can whine in the meantime. But anyway.
You can. This is WBAI.
Heart of mind.
Mm-hmm.
People can call right now.
Yeah, keep calling 212-209-295. What is your premium?
My premium.
Talking to the mic. This is radio.
Now, this audiobook.
Radio.
Elysium by Jennifer Marie Brissett.
Well, you can play some of this. What are you talking about?
Yes, we can. So, I don't want to open that one because that's my... that I produced this.
You this is the one you were working on all this time. How much is this pledge?
$75.
Talking to the mic.
$50 for a download. If,
okay.
And, you know, and the author is supposed to be here.
Well,
with the subways.
But you have so much story to tell for this. Elysium.
I do.
So I don't think you need to worry about $75. And this is not like a skinny little thing. It looks like there's a number of CDs in here.
There's seven CDs.
Seven
about
eight
CDs. Hours long. It's
for $75. When you call 212-209-2950.
I should say I produced it. Skyboat Media produced it.
No, you just did all the work.
I midwifed it.
You produced...
No, Claire Bloom, Benedict, directed it.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie Grant read it, and Skyboat Media, in essence, sold it to the distributor, Blackstone, who in turn sell it on Amazon, but more importantly, have donated copies to WBAI.
And this is an opportunity for you to support Hour of the Wolf and WBAI, and in its very personal gift, because it has the fingerprints of Jim Freund on it.
It does. And Jen Brissett is a writer who I've had on this show. You've met her a couple of times before she even sold her first short story.
Wow.
And this book, her novel, which I'm holding up in front of the microphone, has received major deserved critical acclaim. And the CD, well, I don't really know where you go for reviews of audiobooks.
Well, shouldn't it have the same review as the book? Isn't it the same material?
It's the same material. It's an adaptation because there's a lot of computer code in the book, which I got to decide how we were going to turn that into audio, which is one of the things I wanted to discuss. But it's also a performance. It's an amazing performance by a young actress, now in Hollywood, but out of Texas, just as young black woman going to go places, as Jen has been going places.
So, truthfully, people are going to be able to connect to someone who's going to be big in the big way.
Both the writer.
Well, she's already expansive in that she created it.
She created it.
But she'll have the renown of having created it.
Yes.
Beautiful. 212-209-2950, Elysium, Elysium. And it's a CD set. You'll enjoy it.
And it's also a download.
Whoa, it even gets better.
The download is $50, the CD set, which we only have three of, is 75.
Uh-oh, that means you better call now.
Yeah.
Only three?
Only three.
Call now, 212-209-2950. And then you could just sit back and relax because you would have met your goal. But the downloads keep on coming, right?
The downloads keep on coming, absolutely. And even the physical CD, we can somehow work something out. But these were given to the three.
Oh, I see, yeah. So the first three essentially means your whole donation comes to the station.
Exactly.
And if you donate beyond that, we got to pay a little for it.
Exactly.
I gotcha. I'm going to music so you can start your show.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. There's a moment in the new animated film Boy in the World that's so powerful that completely alters your understanding of the film and the story that Brazilian director Ale Abreu is trying to tell. And I can't tell you about it. To do so would be to mitigate the shock of the moment, that point when you realize that Abreu has used the stock story arc of the child's fantasy against you, has within the deceptively bright color palette and crayon-like visual design been exploring darker themes about the loss of innocence and, more devastatingly, the surrender of hope. That it all takes place within vibrant animation and joyous music by some of Brazil's major artists only lets the blow land even harder. The tale itself is simple enough. A young boy's father has to leave the family farm to work in the city. The boy follows, being helped in his odyssey by farm workers, factory laborers, and city dwellers. There is much generosity on the way, but also poverty, exploitation, and a soul-crushing industrial culture. Abreu eases us into the darker themes, enhancing his two-dimensional hand-drawn designs with computer effects, spreading a cotton harvest across the screen, or capturing the vast mechanical wasteland of a textile factory, all the better to render the impact of one innocent child lost within the apparatus of modern consumer culture. In a number of ways, Boy in the World plays like the flip side of Inside Out, the Pixar film of earlier this year that also tracked a child's first steps toward adulthood. That film was optimistic about the journey, suggesting we end our voyage as fuller, richer beings. Boy in the World is not so sure, focusing on what is lost as we become aware of the world as it now is and what has to be surrendered to survive in it. That it's exhorting for change is clear, that it is doing so by showing us through the distance of innocence what we might no longer be able to perceive ourselves, gives the film a power far beyond its naive visuals. Boy in the World is great, visionary animation, one of the best films this year. Let me make note as well of a new horror film, Anguish, which is opening tomorrow, that takes a somewhat unusual tack to the old possession clichés. In this case, a teenager with some serious emotional disorders, could be schizophrenia, although it isn't specified, becomes possessed by the spirit of a girl who died in a tragic traffic accident and is now determined to reconnect with her mother and her lost life. The cast is largely female, although the director, Sonny Mali, is not. He is making his directing debut here, though, and the outlook decidedly and welcomingly reflects the gender skew. It's not quite as radical a retooling as The Midnight Swim, the very good ghost story I reviewed a while ago. Mali isn't shy about pulling some old Blumhouse-style scary stuff, which at least is stylishly done. And there is maybe a little too much anguish in Anguish, people just staring sullenly at the camera for good long stretches of the film. But the film is effective, creepy where it needs to be, and emotionally engaging in surprising and gratifying ways. Anguish scares and satisfies in turn. That's more than we get a lot of times, so that's good. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving our reviews over at my My Teen Movie Podcast website, so check out what you missed by going to MyTeenMoviePodcast.com.
And good morning, and hello. As Simon would say, we're leaving the door open here in the control room because our guest has not yet arrived. And such is the subway system. Our guest is Jennifer Marie Brissett, author of the book and now the audio book of Elysium. And, oh, she is here. She is here. Arrived is she and Jeff. Hello, people. We have been stalling, and I finally just got on. Don't you love the subways? You can't use that language on the air. I saw the thought balloon over your head, Jen. And Jeff.
Oh, I love you, Jen.
Relax. Do you know where the water is? You go back right by the entrance, right by the entrance to the room. As you came in, there is, yeah, exactly. She's holding up the seven-word sign, the Carlin sign, as it were. There's a water cooler, and you should avail yourself of its services. So, okay, we heard the movie. Keep going all the way down to the room, all the way in the end, and then the machine will be on the right. Okay. Good morning, all. Yeah, we planned this all the time. This is how it is. 12:30 estimate. When WBAI was up in Harlem at CCNY, I told my guests, if they were, you know, coming from elsewhere, do not trust the subway. Lister, who was on after me, with the 3 a.m. start of his program. More often than not, there you go. More often than not, Lister would be half an hour late or something, or, well, 20 minutes late, because of the bleeping subways. Trust them not, can you? He said in Yoda talk. Is Yoda even in the new film? I haven't seen the new film at all. It's only been open for a day. And I've been frankly afraid to go into a crowded movie theater because of today's world events.
Hey.
Good morning, Jen.
Good morning.
Let me see if I've got your mic on properly. Talk to me a little. Talk to me a little.
Hello.
Tap your microphone. It's working. Okay.
I put this on?
You may. You don't need to.
Okay.
I need to because I'm engineering.
Okay.
But know that these microphones, unlike the mics that we had in the other locations where you could sort of like move your head around, these really want you to talk very directly into them.
You can hear me.
I can hear you.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that the listeners can as well.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay, so a bit of a backgrounder. Just about a year ago. Okay, well, when were you first on this show?
Oh, my God.
You were on with Sam J. Miller.
Sam. It was before the book came out.
It was before your first short story was sold.
No, I had a short story sold.
Oh, did you? I've been boasting. I've been lying then. I've been lying on the radio. Wouldn't be the first time, but... But certainly before the book Elysium,
definitely.
Or The World After,
several
published by Aqueduct
several
Press.
Not...
Oh, it was quite a while before the book came out.
It was
over
a year.
I would say over. Oh, definitely over a year.
It's very possible that it was over a year before.
Yeah, I mean, how long ago? Okay, when were you doing the Kindred readings? Because that's why you were on. You were on to promote the Kindred readings.
That was
That's right.
Her book had
Kini Burusalam.
We were the first reading for her book, that Kindred reading.
Hi there.
And so, yeah. So that has to be. You have the right mics up. I can't hear.
I don't. So let's try again, Jen.
Can you hear me?
Oh, now it's. Thank you, Catherine. She not only does yoga. She not only teaches calmness in the world, she corrects my radio.
All right. Okay.
Now that's better. Now
you can hear me now.
Yes.
Yeah, so the first Kindred reading was Keeney's first reading her book.
Yeah, and they're called the Kindred readings because?
Well, several reasons. I mean, you know, there's obviously the Octavia Butler connection.
Yes.
But it was also...
Well, it's not obvious to all the listeners out there, so...
Octavia Butler has a book called, a novel called
This
Kindred.
Isn't a, but yeah. Right.
Was it a first book? It wasn't a first book, was it?
No. I don't think it was. Far from.
Yeah, but it's an early book.
It's one of her earliest recognized books.
Books from Beacon Press, I remember.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Delaney had a number of books before.
Yes,
he became Delaney. You know.
Yeah. And it was also a collection of friends here in New York who, so we were kind of like all kindred spirits and, you know, we're all sci-fi writers of some kind or speculative writers of some kind, and we're all, you know, people of color. And we would, I think at one point we had gotten together for lunch just to meet each other, because I think we were on the Call Brandon message board and had been talking to each other, and I think several of us had never met. And at one point we went to the Brooklyn Public Library, the main branch.
Yeah.
And we all sort of met, and that's when I met Daniel for the first time.
Daniel Jose Older.
Yes. And because I think he was just thinking about grad school or just something like that, and I was telling him a little bit about the grad school I had was in or finishing, I can't remember. And Nora showed up, and Tempest showed up.
And Kay Jemison, and Tempest Bradford.
Yes.
Kay Tempest Bradford.
And a few other.
In the case
places.
Of Tempest, saying Tempest is enough.
Yeah. It was a few of us. And we all, and I looked around and I was like, you know, we could do something with this. There's a few of us here and we should sort of bind together to sort of, you know, help to promote each other's work. I think, Ebi might have been there, or she might have been in, I can't remember, but I did end up doing a reading with her too. And so we all just sort of, I sort of got it into my head that we could sort of do like a series of readings around town at various places. And
something that I am, you know, against your will, encouraging you.
I know.
To do, you know, because you're up here at WBAI.
Yeah.
But you still haven't seen. We just had a party downstairs in the space where we hold the readings.
I've been in that reading room. It's
lovely. You have?
Oh yeah, I've been to a few readings here already.
Oh yeah. Okay. Then.
No, it's lovely. It's absolutely lovely,
you know,
what you got going on here.
You can either do it under the Nyersif banner presents or just your own. I can facilitate.
I mean, the only thing that has held me back about Kindred is that I've gotten so much busier since the book stuff started to. I mean, I didn't expect
because
any of this.
Because somehow you ended up in a Grecian heaven.
I don't know how this all happened. It's sort of.
No, I do.
it's really been funny because it feels like it's been happening kind of in slow motion at fast speed, kind of weirdness, because I know it's been a full year, but it feels like it went by fast, and at times it feels like...
I hardly recognize that it's been a full year since the book was actually published.
It's just crazy. I mean, the book was published December 1st of last year.
Right.
And that's after all the craziness that was happening in my own personal life with having to find a new place and all
that
stuff.
Ms. Brissett's apartment issues.
Yeah.
Do not go onto Facebook and read all these things. They are as much of a nightmare as any New York tenant can ever have outside of a Neil Simon movie.
Yeah, it was not fun. And all of that happened while I was getting final edits on the book, so I had to try and handle all that, and so the year just sort of, I mean, and then promoting the book, you know, running around to the different conventions. Actually, Jeff and I were just talking about that on the train, and it just felt like I was living out of my suitcase, and I think I actually was for a while there.
Yeah. Now the book, let us point out, has received major critical acclaim and should have been up for more awards than it was up for.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you for saying that.
Merely factual.
You. Oh, that is very, very sweet for you to say. I'm just very, I mean, it's done more than I could have imagined.
But the ones that it has been up for include, help me out here.
Philip K. Dick.
The Philip K. Dick Award, which is the best novel first published in
paperback. And I got the special citation for that.
Right. So that's actually a win.
I was up for the Locus for Best New Novel.
Locus is a trade magazine of the science fiction industry.
And I... The Tiptree.
The Tiptree Award.
I got on the honor list for the Tiptree. I heard it was a little close.
Which
too.
Is for gender.
Yes.
For stories dealing with gender issues.
Yes. And I think that's pretty much it. I mean, considering.
But there were other close calls.
There might very well have been. But even just doing that, that's really was beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, it was really the Philip K. Dick especially was such a shock for me. I just didn't.
That's a big deal.
That was a big deal. And, you know, I remember
when you take a look at the other winners, it's like, holy.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of like just to be nominated was amazing. I mean, Jeff's brother and my niece were in town, and we were showing them, I can't remember what building we were in downtown. We were showing them some of the sites, and I'm looking at Twitter, and that's how I found out that I was nominated. And I'm waiting down in Starbucks, and they're up. I think it was the Empire State Building. And so they go up to the top, and I don't like heights, so I'm down in Starbucks sort of, you know, drinking a coffee or something, waiting for them. And I flip through my Twitter feed, and I'll go, oh, my. You know, I'm hyperventilating in the middle of Starbucks, and people are looking at me really weird, and I can't speak. And I'm like, I just got nominated for the Philip K. And, you know, they're not really sci-fi people, so they didn't really understand the magnitude of this, and I'm like, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I could think of to say, you know. But it's still, I mean, it was pretty cool.
At least now we can say Man in the High Castle.
That's
right?
True. And also Minority Report. That's on the air now.
Yeah.
I like the show. Don't
do
you dare.
I haven't watched it, largely because it has, well, there's just so much right now.
Oh, yes, it's
glut.
True.
There's a glut.
Oh yeah,
stuff. Some of it is actually good.
I'm curious about The Expanse, which just started.
I'm curious about it. The reviews.
I don't know. I really haven't. I've only saw the pilot.
It looks
expensive.
It looks expensive, yeah. but it doesn't look novel.
I have no idea where it's going to go. I'm curious.
I've recorded, but I have not seen any of Childhood's End.
Yeah, I just got wind of that actually this afternoon that was even happening.
Well, yeah. It's sort of they didn't do a lot of the proper promotion the way they would for, say, Sharknado. From all indications, it's actually while it's updated and adapted in many ways, and we'll talk about adaptation in a little while.
Okay,
it's faithful to the writings of Arthur C. Clarke, which is sort of astonishing for anything on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, I mean, the Sci-Fi Channel does seem to be wanting to win us back, and I remember...
Win us back, we were never there. Well, they had one show, Battlestar Galactica.
Well, I'm talking even before Battlestar Galactica. I mean, they were losing people before then, and then when they decided after Battlestar Galactica to end it, that they were going to do that whole PR change of the name and get rid of all of the I'm like, what are you doing? They got rid of all the Stargates, which I was starting to really enjoy, and they got rid of...
Yeah, but those were originally produced elsewhere. And after the show had jumped the shark, that's when Sci-Fi took it.
Yeah, well, there was just like a lot of stuff they were pulling in. It was a science fiction channel, whether it was good or bad.
It was the wrestling channel.
Well,
it was the ghost-busting channel.
It became worse than that. I mean, it was, after 10.
It was that from the start.
But during the day, they did have like at least some good reruns, which I liked.
For a while. Yeah.
And then they got rid of everything, and I kind of kept...
But then they do... an abomination of Earthsea.
Well, you see, that I don't even want to talk about. Because that was awful.
And how about the River World?
That was just awful.
Philip Jose Farmer.
It was just absolutely awful.
But there's some stuff that just can't be adapted.
And I don't know. I mean, I wish to
lead in there.
Yeah. Well, I think, I hope they continue to try to do stuff. I mean, when they dropped off the sci-fi train is when all the other channels were jumping on, and we had The Walking Dead, and of course the George R. R. Martin stuff, and you know, everybody.
I'll bet
got
you're
something.
Like me. I bet that you don't watch the George R. R. Martin stuff for the same reason that I don't watch it: gore.
I like looking at the cinematography, the landscapes.
Oh,
those things are beautiful, but there's some really disturbing stuff going on.
Yeah, I dropped out long before they killed Ned Stark, just because.
Oh, really? All the way back then?
Like episode 7 or so.
Wow.
Because there was a battle mm-hmm. in a courtyard, and you can tell when to avert your eyes if you are squeamish like me.
Yeah.
And so eyes averted, not a problem.
Yeah.
Okay? Battle over.
No,
I could tell, open my eyes, and then what happens? But there's a close-up of a slain person's neck and a close-up of the arterial spouting. That's gratuitous. Showing some gore in a battle, that's one thing. But then closing in on arterial spouting from a neck?
Well, you know, the thing that bothered me about the show was the sort of... And I totally don't blame R. Martin for this, because I've listened to all of his books.
I don't blame George either.
I don't blame him at all. But the rape scenes that are just background noise. And for me, that's just really disturbing. I don't really enjoy that.
Yeah.
I love seeing the images of the dragons, and I love, those wonderful.
There's great epic fantasy there,
stuff.
And the deadliness of it is no worse than, say, Coriolanus.
Yeah, but you know
but which is pretty gory, actually, the Shakespeare play. Mm. And there's a new version of Macbeth, which is supposed to be just blood soaked.
Well,
but Macbeth is a horror story.
It's like. The thing that's really lovely about the show is that I kind of see what they're doing, but what's really awful about the show is that I don't think I can see it again. Like, even if I, there's some things that you can just see once and you just don't want to go back there.
There are a few things that I have seen which I loved and don't want to endure again, because the endurance just caused so much stress.
Yeah. And then you start to wonder, like, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah.
I don't want to do this again. So,
And I know that you're a very emotive, is that a good word, person? You're a person who bleeds when the world bleeds.
A bit. I've been trying to
And the world's bleeding a lot.
I've been trying to be more protective of myself this year, because I think I've been extra tender.
Catherine, who just left here and was just on the air, she's expert at healing. I don't know how she does it.
I know how she does
it. She teaches yoga.
Yeah.
It's not just yoga, but anyway.
I'm definitely trying to be more protective of myself these days.
So you write this book.
Yeah.
And it's a complex, fascinating book. And as I was reading it, I was going, wow. And as always happens with me, I could hear it as I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, this ought to be an audiobook.
And guess what you did?
guess what I did. Now, I did not produce this audiobook, but I did midwife it. I think
did.
I tried to obtain the rights, but I had no idea what I was doing, talking to agent, talking to a publisher.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not how you do it. But I am the post-production editor of Lightspeed Magazine, which means that I'm working with the good people at Skyboat Media, which are Stefan Rutnicki and Gabrielle DeCure, and they turn out tons of audiobooks, and I've been editing some of their audiobooks, including large collections of short stories like Women Destroy Science Fiction. All this stuff. I've done 7 books for them now as a post-production editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell Stefan about Elysium. And about 2 weeks later, he's obtained the rights.
Really? That fast?
Yeah, that fast.
Wow.
That fast. He just sent a deal memo.
Yeah.
and wow. acquired it and told me, there you go. Who would you want to read it?
Yeah.
And I said, I'd like Jamie Marie Grant to read it. And he said, how would you know about her? It's like, I have edited now how many short stories for you guys? And she's read or acted in about 5 or 6 of them.
Oh,
she's
wow.
a relatively young actress.
Yes, I can tell that.
And
she did a great job.
And he said, well,
yeah.
okay. And he wanted Claire Bloom Benedek to
mm-hmm.
be the director, although it just says, when you look it up, Claire Bloom.
Just Claire Bloom.
Which can be a little bit misleading.
Yeah, wow.
But nonetheless, I'd just as soon have Claire Bloom Benedek be the director
yeah.
than the other Claire Bloom.
Okay.
Because I don't know how the other Claire Bloom, even though she did star in The Illustrated Man.
Oh, really?
Yes, with her ex-husband, Rod Steiger.
Oh.
They did the movie version of The Illustrated Man together.
No kidding. Oh.
And also Claire Bloom played the, this is something that nobody remembers, she played the 10th Doctor's mysterious woman who's probably his mother.
See, now you're losing me.
In like one episode of Doctor Who. But she was on Doctor Who.
Yeah, my Doctor Who lore doesn't go that quick. Oh, I don't know as much as I...
No, I that's where I'm a total nerd.
Okay.
And then, so there, we had a few emails back
yes.
and forth
mm-hmm.
On... Well, there's a lot of code, and I was talking with Jen, and... Jen had exactly the same questions that Claire did, which were, well, how are you going to handle pages of computer code?
Yes.
And I said, we'll do it. And I created that.
Yeah, I don't think I was much help at all.
No, you were. You were.
I was.
Well, to begin with, you agreed with the basic premise that you didn't want to subject listeners to, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Of, you know, 110111,
yeah.
run, C code, command, run. Mm. So, but I did do the stereotypical, let's, a little bit of fuzz in the voice, and at certain points, speed up the variable, speed down,
yeah.
because the computer system, AI, occasionally goes a little bit haywire.
Yeah.
And it reboots not itself, it reboots people.
Yes. Reboots the story, reboots people, reboots a lot of stuff.
Who they are, what they are, which is one of the reasons why the reader is so important.
Yeah.
Because while we only have really 2, maybe 3 primary characters, and only, what would you say, 1 point of view character? No, 2 point of view characters.
Two.
There's 2 point of view
because
characters.
Because I alternated here and there.
Yeah, yeah. But they change in gender, in race, in...
Age.
In age, in...
And their relationships to each other.
In whether or not they have wings.
Yes. yes.
How often they see elks.
And all that stuff.
You know, yes. all that stuff. And
all of it is very important for the story and for you to... Get that to happen with audio is, you know, it's really...
And I'm taking a look at the code in there, and I'm saying, but this code makes sense.
Yeah, because it's
you
real.
I know computers going back to the C prompt days,
yeah.
and I know a little Unix
yeah.
and stuff like that, and I'm seeing that the code actually makes sense in terms of the context
yeah.
of the story. And hopefully... We kept, because that part was up to me, what to cut out, what to keep
yes.
in, how to sound it, when it should go fast versus slow and all that. So that was, and so I finished, equalized, mastered the readings after Jamie and Claire were done, and I sent it to Skyboat, and Skyboat sent it to Blackstone Audio,
mm-hmm.
and December 1st, officially,
yes.
a year after the book came out, the audiobook came out. art.
And I love the cover of what they
did. Did they do a wonder? Now, that was done totally by Blackstone.
Yeah.
We thought that the cover of the book from Aqueduct was great. And it is.
Yes.
But I have to say, I think the audiobook cover possibly surpasses in terms of understanding the story. And people, you can go online and look at it. In fact, if you go to WBAI.org and look for the description of this morning's show, you can see the cover of the audiobook. And it shows you this, the novel has a fascinating, deteriorating city. I would say almost a Dahlgren-ish city in a way.
Yeah, I kind of like what the fact that it feels like they're kind of a computer-generated kind of buildings because they're too straight. You know, like no buildings really look like that. And the
perspective.
And they're deteriorating.
That the artist gives them.
Yes, it looks like these are artificial buildings
that
are falling apart.
But the audiobook cover has this slope to it that says, ooh, this is not necessarily as stable a computerized world. And
the
more
double
importantly,
city.
Yeah.
The double river city.
The double river city and equally important, the owl-like.
The owl, yes. Yeah, that was nice to see. And the wings outstretched and all that. That's just neat.
Yeah.
And it sort of echoes the title in his wing.
Yeah. And also, I do find it curious, though, that it's the audiobook that has the full, complete title. And not the print book.
Yeah, yeah.
The full complete title is Elysium or The World After.
When we talked about it at the press to decide to have the inside have the full title and not on the outside, was that it's sort of a more old-fashioned kind of way of handling books.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of liked that. I kind of liked the idea, you know, you just have the main title on the front and then inside you sort of have that sort of like little extra something. But it's really sort of neat to see how the audiobook handled everything. I mean, you know, the glow and the, I mean, I was really just tickled when I saw the double city.
I was amazed.
They nailed it.
But I want to tell you something about the audio editing process. As is, between the director and the reader, they spend, I should know exactly how many hours, although I didn't get any of the rehearsal stuff. I got everything they recorded. And it ends up being just shy of 8 hours long when done, but they must have recorded about 14 hours.
Wow.
You know, which I then turned into
7-something hours.
7.8 hours.
Yeah.
To be precise.
Yeah.
And the, but I am listening to every breath. I am listening to every lip smack and every intimate sound that one hears when you're listening to something on a mic, which is to say, and at the same time, I am listening to the prose. I am listening to the performance and the characters. And you begin to appreciate the novel in a way that just reading it through for the first time alone, and it's a book that I think needs to be read more than once.
I've heard that from several people that they felt like they needed to read it more than once.
Absolutely, because it's a multi-layered book.
Yeah, I was really going for that, but it's kind of very pleasing to hear people, you know, to have
the confirmation.
Yeah, that somebody really did get that. Oh, you need to. There's like details that the second time through you might catch.
There's a great deal going on. I mean, I said it before. Mm. I'll give a 3-letter, 1-word spoiler: elk.
Yeah.
and I'll just say no more.
Okay.
And that's not anything that's actually overtly described within the book itself. It takes knowing a little bit of research into Grecian myth. Or is it history?
It's history.
It's history.
And it's Roman.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's Roman.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, I really kind
That's of, one thing yeah. that after the fact, yeah, I have to admit that was largely my decision to not put that in the audiobook.
And you
the
know,
afterword. The and answer, I know it's yeah. a part of the book.
Yeah. I mean, when I first heard the book, when I finished listening to all seven whatever hours, my first thing, I was like, where is that afterward?
That afterward, yeah.
And then when you said that, you know, it didn't quite like it's sort of like anticlimactical as an audio experience.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, okay, I can buy
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because you're hearing that. This ending, which is, I wouldn't call it devastating, but it's a major reveal. It's a yeah. major reveal, and your mind is just going, whoa, okay. Yeah. It has now not only come together, but all the little concentric circles that have been whizzing around asking all of these questions about what is going on here are starting to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the ending, which is a powerful tour de force-like ending, does
oh,
that.
So nice to me. Thank
to,
you.
to then, it would simply be the next track. We couldn't stop the audiobook.
Yeah, yeah.
Or anything like that in order to include this thing about Hadrian and Antinous.
Yeah.
Antinous. Antinous, thank you.
And the thing is, I realized actually from that conversation was that the audiobook is an interpretation of the book.
It's an adaptation. Yeah.
And you know, each is two different experiences, the reading experience and the audio experience, and they're both lovely. And I'm just really tickled with how the audiobook came out, because I thought it was just this neat interpretation, because it was like when I was listening to it, it's like hearing my own thoughts coming back at me and like an echo. Like
yeah.
weird.
I'm so pleased that you have no idea how nervous I was about how you would take this.
I
stayed out of communication with you for the time that I was doing the actual. I mm-hmm. spent about 6 weeks
uh-huh.
on that book alone, on this book alone.
Wow! And wow! I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
You know, with headphones and the text in front of me on a tablet and, just open the door. So I have the text on a tablet with the director's marks, and then I'm looking at the computer where I'm doing the edits. So, and wearing headphones. So I am thoroughly mired in this, and it came at a time when in the world of freelance it's feast or famine.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had like 5 books coming in at once.
Oh man.
One of which was this pet project.
Oh wow.
And I am so worried at that point.
Yeah.
About how you were going to take it. And then I'd get the occasional email, "Hi Jim, how's it going?"
Yeah.
And I'm going, "Ah!"
I tried not to bother you. I just wanted to know what was happening.
And I thought it was going well. But that's not the issue at hand. Mm. The issue at hand, it's like when a playwright, you know, is done and the playwright turns it over to the director, who
yeah.
turns it over to the actors, who turn it over to the audience, and now it's like 5 steps removed
yeah, yeah.
from the author's inner voice.
Yeah.
One person who we did an audio book story of, I'll name the people, Matt Kressel, said,
uh-huh.
"Oh, what a great, you know, it was like hearing all of these inner voices
yeah.
coming back at me." And another person by the name of Sam J. Miller,
okay,
who we did an adaptation of one of his stories, which has been getting quite a bit of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
He said I can't listen to it. This isn't the inner voice that I, and how could it be?
It's never going to be, because that voice in your head doesn't even sound like my voice.
It's the mind's eye.
Yeah, it's a different voice.
The mind's ear, one should say.
And so, you know, I sort of knew that all along. And so I, when I was listening to the book, I sort of accepted that it would be not the voice in my head, and be something else. But what was just neat for me was hearing the different ways that she would pronounce things, the different kind of rhythm.
The outtakes are very interesting. Yeah. Like, you know, let's accent Antoine versus Antone. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's make very clear. And the way she would take the same voice and make it more huskier.
Yes.
And to just denote the gender change.
And even how she handled the little boys.
Yeah.
And, you know, she became the little boy.
She really, and between yes, the two of them, because...
it was neat.
Yeah.
Hector.
Yeah, and Hector.
And Hector.
Especially Hector.
Hector, she nailed Hector. I really liked
it. Yeah,
she
really
that.
Did. I know.
I really
we have a couple of
that.
Hectors here at WBAI. And I have known a few Hectors
in
my life.
Yeah, I think I've known a few Hectors.
And you
want to
know more people? I bet you do. Read the books, or better yet, listen to the book. Or better yet, pledge to WBAI. And you can get a copy of the book, $75. We have only three at this time, of the physical CD. Here. Got that?
It really is a lovely package, too.
And it really is. It really is. But for $50, you can get the MP3 download. And these are being made available by the publisher and by Skyboat Media at no cost to WBAI. Thank you, folk. We really appreciate it.
That is lovely.
And it really is. Yeah. And all you have to do is call 212-209-2950 in order to obtain these. But should we give people a taste of the book?
Go right ahead.
Okay, this is the sample that was given on downpour.com, which is the publisher's website. The publisher's Blackstone. But they have both a website for libraries, just library sales, and another website for consumers. And Downpour is their consumer website. So here's the Amazon has a different one. Mm-hmm. So here is... the downpour.com version.
Chapter 4. From the time she was a little girl, Adrienne wore white. White veils, white dresses, white panties, and then white bras. Whiteness was purity. Whiteness was good. Whiteness was strength. It was her shield and armor. Her brown skin covered always in white. It granted her access to all places unhindered. Even when she didn't realize it, there was always someone moving out of her way, opening a door, giving up a seat. This privilege, this honor, was given to her in exchange for a promise. A promise that she would inwardly be as innocent and pure as she appeared. A promise to remain a woman child. A promise she had kept for 15 years, half of her appointed period of time. But Adrienne had a secret. The soft sounds of her sandals scraping the stone-tiled floor resounded beneath the high ceilings of the cloister's inner hall. She was alone. Thomas had gone to his room in the lower levels. Everyone else was at the games. Adrienne had the place to herself. It was a monastic hall filled with centuries-old art collected by diligent and discerning hands. Her favorite room was the one with the tapestries, a room with ceiling-high, hand-embroidered wall hangings that depicted an elk hunt. Each panel showed a different stage of the game played by noblemen of old, in search of the mystical creature who seemed to elude them at every turn. Adrienne had been told that these images held a metaphor for virginity, that the elusive elk was a symbol of the strength to withstand the temptation of copulation. It always seemed like such a thin explanation. Every time Adrienne looked upon these beautiful tapestries, she thought of sacrifice and marriage. She entered the next room. Before her, the marble statue of Vesta, the veiled virgin goddess herself, looked down with maternal eyes. Within her hand was carved an oil lamp burning stone flames, and etched at her feet were stalks of
And you just heard a taste, a smidgen of Elysium, or The World After, read by Jamie Marie Grant, by Jennifer Marie Brissett, who's with us this morning, and directed by Claire Bloom, a different Claire Bloom. But as far as I'm concerned, she is the Claire Bloom, because she did such...
For us,
because she did such a magnificent job on this. She really did. And we have gotten... it even says right here on the website, I should have looked, that, yes, recipient of 2015 Philip K. Dick Award Special Citation, a 2014 Locus Recommendation for First Novel.
And went beyond that, because they, from the recommendation list to get to the finalist list is a...
Yeah,
you know. That's going further.
And there's a lot of books came out 2014.
Yes, there were.
And
a lot of good books too.
Yeah. So this is an opportunity for you to say thank you to WBAI for having a radio show in which this kind of thing is not unusual, in which this is what we tried to accomplish. Multicultural thinking, intelligence. I mean, sometimes, yeah, you just want to go take the rocket ship in your hand and go, go zoom, zoom, like Star Wars, which, by the way, will be the topic of the show next week. I don't know if I'll have seen it by then, but Dan Persons will have. And the week after that, by the way, will be the Council of Elrond, our annual Tolkien broadcast.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a reading I produced in 1972,
wow.
A little while ago.
Just a little while ago.
Where the readers, Baird Searles, who was the first person that I did any volunteer work outside of answering phones for here at WBAI, when Baird was producing a radio drama by Samuel R. Delaney with Chip as the narrator.
Wow.
But it had about 7 or 8 voices in it, and I was the most important person in that production because I got the coffee. I was, I guess, 14 years old.
Wow.
And so this is a radio station that could bring you original drama by Delaney, which, by the way, that story did win the Nebula Award for Best Novella. It was then published, I think in Worlds of Tomorrow. Either Galaxy or Worlds of Tomorrow.
Okay.
Somebody will look it up and correct me.
Yeah.
But Searles really was the person who created an atmosphere here at WBAI and eventually elsewhere at Pacifica Radio, where the idea of science fiction programming wasn't just, you know, is Captain America going to face down Loki or not?
Mm-hmm.
So, you're here. You're preempted. Did you know that? But you're going to do your show anyway. There's a note on the door. Yeah. Oh. Good. That's very good, Lister. Okay. So you remember Jen, don't you, Lister? Jen and Lister and Jeff. Okay. WBAI is, I mean, we had our holiday party where there was a great deal of self-congratulatory, aren't we great and aren't we wonderful? And you know what? I have one word to add to that. Yes.
Yeah.
because we can do this. Mm-hmm. And we can present this kind of programming and that we can bring you people like Jennifer Marie Brissett before her first novel came out.
Yes, she did.
And then get copies for you as thank you gifts for your pledge of $75 to get the full audiobook CD. We only have three of those, and that's what I recommend because it is gorgeous.
It really is.
It really is.
It really is.
I think the website is give the and then the number two WBAI. But you know what? Just go to WBAI.org. And then from there, you'll see, you know, pledge for your favorite show. And your favorite show, we know, is Hour of the Wolf. So you're going to look at that. And you also, it's in the program highlights. If you go to the front page there and you can see what's on the air now, you will see the cover of the book. But then if you click on that, you can get a copy of the book in exchange. You will gift us, you will pledge and give us $75, and we will gift you. See, it's not a sale, it's a gift. We will gift you a copy of the physical audio CD of Elysium. And for $50, you can get the download version, which is you get to hear the whole book in its entirety, and you can print out a copy of the lovely cover and and stare at it while you're listening to it. But I say get the more limited edition of the physical CD. 212-209-2950 is the number to call and make that pledge to support WBAI, to support Hour of the Wolf, to support the kind of speculative fiction writing. What would you call this? I would say, there are people who would argue with me when I would say that this is hard science fiction.
I don't think it's hard science fiction. I've been trying to become comfortable with the idea of science fantasy, not in the Jack Vance sort of vein, but sort of its own sort of, you know.
Science fantasy, what I would call Star Wars.
And this borderlines on that.
Because but you see, Star Wars pays no attention to, is this, you know, vaguely possible, the science here. That's why he sets it in, you know, long ago. And far away.
Well, but a lot of the things that are happening in this book aren't possible either. You know, people don't sprout wings.
I don't want to give away any major reveals. Yeah. But I would say that once you have... Okay, let's discuss Lord of Light by Roger Zelazny.
God, you know, I never finished that.
Oh, it's an amazing book.
The first time
you read it is about the Hindu gods.
Yeah.
And it's about, and the lead character is Mahasamatman, or Sam for short, a.k.a. Siddhartha, a.k.a. the Buddha. And it's the Hindu gods. It's fantasy, right? No, you see, they're all from a ship. And they all took these incredible powers upon themselves.
Yes, they were supposed to be.
And everything that is in there, including reaching nirvana, including the regeneration and all that, it's all technology.
Yes.
And And all that. So the second time you read the book, it's science fiction. The first time, it's fantasy. The second time, it's science fiction. And the third time, it's just a really good book.
I think I got about halfway through it, and I probably should go back.
Go back. Go back. There are a few books that, you know, it took me three tries to do Dahlgren.
Oh, my gosh, Dahlgren.
Yeah. Dahlgren is such a amazing, dense book. The thing is that it's an easy read once you and it are on the same wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, getting onto that wavelength is not simple. So it took me through, then first time I made 50 pages, next time I made only 30 pages, and the third time I just zipped right through it, and when you get to the last line, you have to reread the entire thing because it's circular. For I've come to wound the autumnal city. That's but the last and
first. I think I'm on the second or third try for that one.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
It's not a simple book. Did you did you see at ReaderCon this year the panel that we did Dahlgren 50 years later?
I think I had a panel conflicting.
Yeah, but it's online actually.
Oh really? Yeah, I didn't know
the
that.
Panel is online.
Oh cool.
The amazing part is Terrence Taylor.
Yes.
Had never read the book.
We wrote up to ReaderCon together, Jeff and I.
Oh my God.
And he's like, "Do you have Dahlgren on, you know, on your?" I'm like, "No, I don't have it on my phone right now. What are you talking about?"
And he read the entire thing on the trip up.
Yes.
And then when he got to speak, and Delaney is in the room, mind you.
Yes, yes, he was there.
You know, stroking his beard as he does. You know, and we're all like, okay, yeah, we're talking about this book, and there's Chip.
Yeah.
And Terrence just went into this, like, 5-minute orgasmic speech. He was crying at the end of it and, like, leaping. Oh, you've got to see it.
I did not know
it's
that
on
it was
YouTube.
There.
It's on YouTube.
I'll find it. I'll find
Captain
it.
Captain Plan. But, you know, look up Dahlgren on YouTube.
Yeah, look it
and
up.
You'll see it. The sound isn't great, but the visual is all there. And turn up the sound and watch Terrence. Elysium is a little bit like that.
Oh, wow. Now, that's kind of a statement.
The difference is that it was much easier for me to find the wavelength.
You know, I've heard from different people. I mean, it's been interesting to hear from different readers. Some people sail through it. And some people...
I sailed through it the first time.
...had a tougher time, like, because I know... I purposefully jerk you out of your comfort zone by not having this narrative that just goes straight through. I constantly am...
Restarting, re-interrupting,
and it's really to keep you awake, and it's really to jerk you into a sense of the panic of what's happening, and the feeling of loss that is going on in the book, and I was being experimental with it, but not in the sort of let me just play with your mind kind of thing. I mean, I was really trying to do something artistic.
Well, that's the thing. Book. That's the thing is that at first it seems a little bit like a gimmick.
Yeah.
At first. And then you start to realize that this is no gimmick at all. This is... the premise of the book itself and what it is doing is particularly important. And at the end, at the denouement, it is, at that point, you recognize that it was all consistent all the way through and that those system interrupts make absolute perfect sense.
I'm glad that you got that. Because that was important for me.
And the first time it was, oh, I get it. I'm going to have to reread that at some point in order to really understand. And then after that, when I was going through it as a editing the audiobook, you're just getting so much, so many of those levels coming together at once when you reach that denouement. And since I had read the book through once, I could now appreciate all the little touches that are in there. So it's a read twice book. Oh, yeah, good. It good. Really is.
That's really what I was kind of going for. I mean, there's so many things you try for as a writer, and, you know, whether you pull it off or not, is you never really quite know. You try to finish the piece that you're working on to your own personal satisfaction, yeah. But you never know how readers are going to receive what you've put out. And it's always satisfying when I hear somebody get it.
Yeah.
And really sort of, oh, you know, play back for me what I said and really say, oh, I get what you're doing here. This, oh, wow, you just blew my mind. And it's just like, yes, thank you. I'm so happy.
In this case, literally play it back.
Yeah.
Should we try another sample?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And this is the sample provided from Amazon.
Cars and the trucks. And the buses. An elk. Its furry hindquarters protruded as it entered the crowd and sauntered through the shoppers, the vendors, and the construction workers. Its antlers rose high upon its elegant head, spreading upwards like giant fingers into a crown as it strode nonchalantly along the bustling city street. Adrienne stopped to examine what she could so clearly see. Yet everyone else seemed blind to it. The elk turned to face Adrienne. They considered each other for a long pause, gazing into each other's eyes. They were momentarily interrupted by a tourist double-decker bus. After it passed, they resumed their connection. Then the elk lifted its head as if in a nod and sauntered away. Adrienne watched as it disappeared into the crowd. She remained on the street corner, blocking the path, and got pushed and shoved, not out of rudeness, but simply because she was in the way. Her mind was now blank. She had been considering something strange that she could not remember. It was possible that the heat was affecting her. The sun beat down warmly over her face and hair. She moved away from the corner towards the shade of a storefront's awning, fumbling in her purse, searching for a piece of tissue so that she could wipe her nose and dab the perspiration from under her eyes. Her phone buzzed. Hey, Helen, I'm on my way. Oh. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, that's okay, don't worry, it's fine. Maybe next week. Yeah, really, don't worry about it. I'll see you later. Yeah, bye. Damn. It was just a lunch. An ordinary lunch. But Adrienne needed to talk. Something was happening at home. Something she felt through her skin. Something that, if spoken to a trusting ear, she might find was nothing but a wisp of smoke. But she needed to be assured that her imagination was working overtime before her fears gained form and weight. Going home was not something she really wanted to do, and the streets were so full today. Vendor tables were lined up along the edges of the sidewalk with handmade crafts, t-shirts, scarves, leather holders for pocket gadgets. The table nearest to her had some jewelry that was interesting. She waited patiently while another woman examined a bracelet. The woman put it on and the shiny metal loops looked exotic and graceful on her wrist. Adrienne gently squeezed past her to pick up a necklace of polished stones that glittered over twisted bronze and copper. She held it up, decided it was too extravagant, and put it down. She looked at a few pairs of earrings, trying them against her face in the small plastic mirror hanging from the stand. None of them appeared as nice on her as they did on the table, so she put them back as well. The heat of the seller's stare told her he was about to make the hard pitch for a sale. She gave the table one final look before he could speak, then walked away. Voices, accents, languages whose rhythms echoed places Adrienne had never seen, and maybe never would, beat past her like a marching band. The sounds were a blending stream of conversations and sighs. The faces that passed her were from all over the world, each a different shape and color. The smell of roasting peanuts on open charcoal burners, curried meats, frying falafels, and urine from the gutters drifted through the heated summer air. Adrienne moved asynchronously in the uneven flow of people. Many in the crowd carried multiple shopping bags stamped with designer logos, walking credit card bills with grinning faces. The open doors of the boutiques and electronics stores blasted icy wind from air conditioners set on super high. The cold beckoned to her. She relished the cool against her skin. Through her reflection on the window of a clothing store, she could see the plastic people looking at the mannequins in their styled outfits.
Well, there is a little bit more to what Amazon provided, but we only have a little bit of time left. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to point out to all you listeners here, or there, wherever you may be, just, you know, if you heard both those samples, the vestigial virgins versus the shopping malls, that is what you're dealing with in this book, Adrian and Adrienne, and this character and that character, and their relationships to each other, and all that, and it becomes... It's just fascinating. It's just fascinating. And it's very hard to talk about without the reveals. I don't want to say spoilers. They're not spoilers. But they're reveals. They're things that if we tell you what ties it all together so simply, you will lose, I think, some of the pleasure of the oh my God at the end of the book. And it's not like, you know, we're not talking about a spoiler like, you know, he's a girl.
Yeah.
Or she's a guy or something like that. It's not one of those. No. If it were anything that simple, it wouldn't be that good.
No. Well, thank you.
So if you, again, you, the listener, want to show your appreciation for the book, for a radio show that can bring you this kind of materials, on the radio station that can host a radio show that can do that in the house that Jack built. The telephone number to call is area code 212-209-2950. If you'd simply like to become a member of WBAI, and who wouldn't, that's $25. But if you make a $50 pledge, you'll be entitled to a download of the full, complete, unabridged audiobook, Elysium, or The World After. And for a $75 pledge, you will get the physical CD set of the audiobook itself, suitable for listening on CD players in cars. It's not an MP3, it's an actual audio CD. The MP3 version, you just download it, and then you can hear it on your phone or whatever. But a lot of people still prefer the actual physical CD, and the packaging is so nice.
It really is.
I just realized that, yes, here, there's the same copy. That spoiler copy is right on the back. So we can say a computer program, and Jen wrote this. I shouldn't read it?
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't even think if you were to read that and you say, oh, it's spoiler, I don't think it would give away too.
Okay, so let's just read it then. Yeah. A computer program etched into the atmosphere has a story to tell. The story of two people of a city lost to chaos of survival and love. The program's data, however, has been corrupted. As the novel's characters struggle to survive the apocalypse, they are sustained and challenged by the demands of love in a shattered world, both haunted and dangerous. No, that's good. That's good. It's just that I sort of like, I just immersed myself without reading any of that. I just went straight for started with the prologue, which is sort of chapter one in the audiobook, because, again, there was no way to do that separately.
Yeah.
So, you know, track one is actually a prologue.
Yes, that's the way you did. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way they did it. It's the way I did it.
Yeah.
It's the way it had to be done, because you can't have, like, you know, it was either leaving it out or doing it as track one. Those are the only, or making it much more expensive and putting out a separate CD with that on it.
No, you don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that.
And you
cannot do that. Yeah. So we did that. We're explaining that, you know, on page I, really, mm-hmm. you know, the way they used to number books, even before the... there's actually two sections before chapter one begins. There's the opening preface, and then there's
the code.
There's the computer,
yeah.
Which actually does tell you immediately that there's a computer at work throughout this story.
But if you're not prepared for it, you wonder what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think anybody got it before the end of the book?
I think some people did, and I think some people underestimated what was happening because they figured that they got it, or whatever that means, got it. Oh, I get it. There's the computer going on and la, 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 and I get what's happening here. And and if you sort of fell for the idea that it was a gimmick, you lost some of what was going on with the book, which in a way I was playing with a few tropes, and I was, you know,
yeah,
and I was, you know, and I was conscious about that.
Yeah.
That I, you know, all the different things that you see.
That actually gave it a certain delightful.
Yeah. I mean, I was having some fun.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have a little fun.
You know, you got to have a lot of fun.
You got to have a lot of fun.
And for all of that, the book is a good deal of fun, I must say. Yeah. Put on your headphones and let's see what this person has to say. And this person is gone. Well, they may call back. But keep the headphones handy
okay.
in case we decide to let other people have a word in edgewise. But the phone number you should be calling is 212-209-2950 in order to pledge to WBAI to get a copy of Elysium or The World After. $75 pledge will get you the physical CD, $50 for the MP3 download. And good morning, you are on the radio.
Good morning, folks.
Okay, you have about 1 minute.
Yes, I have a question for Jen Brissett. Good morning, Jen Brissett.
Good morning.
Happy holiday.
Thank you.
Because I'm the second most curious critter in the known universe. Yes, because, yes, and yes. What's the difference, if any, major or minor, between the audio cover and the book cover?
Well, we discussed that earlier at length.
Oh.
That's okay.
So listen to the archive.
Well, I mean, I would say that the difference is that it's just two different points of view of how to look at the book. One really, the book itself has more, this is a computer-generated city, and the audio has...
I would say more of a point of view.
Point of view, sort of like, you know, it understood that there's, you know, I'm playing with two different cities underground and above the ground.
So your book is basically a kind of an homage to Greco-Roman history myth?
It's not really about history. It's about history, not really myth as much.
Interesting that you use elk. Have you read any books on elk myth vis-a-vis Native American mythology, because the elk is very important in indigenous cultures here in North America?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really think about the elk in that way.
The elk is very, very important in the book.
It's important to the book.
And symbolic.
And it's in symbolic for you see, I don't want to give away anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's symbolic for something important that is happening in the book.
By the way, James, you're doing 221 in 2 weeks? 221.
Yes.
Yeah, you're doing
probably in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Oh.
Yeah, there are some variables and things going on, so we'll have to see how it goes. I know that next week is Star Wars.
Yes,
and
I know.
In 2 weeks will either be
221.
221, which is Tolkien, or Steel Ice Span, end of the year celebration.
Yes.
So it'll be one of the two, but Tolkien will happen somewhere within the next month.
I hope it's after two weeks. I'd hate to miss it, even though in two weeks I will
well,
be
Well, it'll still be on the
Wales.
Archive. Anyhow, our time is up. Have a good morning.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. So, and having said that our time is up, where have they hidden my theme music? There it is. There it is. It's not that they hid it, it's that I can't find it. So, one last pitch to all of you. We also started the program about 7 or 8 minutes late. We didn't get started talking to Jen until about 15 minutes into the show. But again, it's just a magnificent... I mean, here's one important question. When the book is over, is there anywhere it could possibly go after that?
Oh, yeah. I'm working on it.
Oh, yeah. That's why you won't do the Kindred readings quite yet.
I'm working on the second book. And there
Wanted you to say it.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it's actually part of a trilogy. There's the third book is sort of mulling in the back of my head. I have some sketches on the third book, but I'm well into the second book. Like the eighth draft or something like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, once again, Jen, thank you for being here. It was not an easy effort to get to this part of Brooklyn from where you are, I know. Hello. From, like, the most northern points of Manhattan.
Yeah, Canada.
Just about. down here to the former city of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
but thank you again.
No, thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. 212-209-2950. By the way, let me say that your pledge is very, 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 very important to the future of this radio program. More important than I can say. Please pledge. 212-209-2950. Everybody, be good to each other. Happy Saturnalia. It's the most important holiday of the month for me. Because all the others are fun, but Saturnalia is, I think, the oldest of them, even possibly older than Yule, I believe. But it's certainly in keeping with Elysium, I must say. It's an old Roman holiday, Saturnalia. The name says it all.
Okay.
So lots of wining, dining, and orgies. 212-209-2950. So you can pledge for wining, dining. Well, be good to each other. Take good care. We'll be back next week with Daniel Persons talking about some movie that opened. Take care. Out on the sea.